Burnsy, mate, I just remembered, dude, we completely forgot to do the intro for the podcast this week.
Biscuits, we got to get onto that, man.
Yeah, man, we got to get onto it real quick. Hey, hang up and I'll give you a call back, all right?
All right, I'm hanging up. Chat soon, yeah. Hello, it's Burnsy.
Hey, Burnsy. How's it going, mate?
Blair, the co-host of the Diets Group podcast. How are you, man?
The one and only. I'm good, buddy. I'm good. How's your weekend?
Yeah, look, it was pretty cool. Got up to a few things. But, you know, the best part was I talked with Maggie Dent.
Shut up.
No, you shut up.
Good point. Sorry, man. I went all high school chick on you there. Maggie Dent, like the Maggie Dent, the author Maggie Dent.
Yeah, the author Maggie Dent, who wrote Mothering Our Boys, From Boys to Men and Girlhood.
Is that the same Maggie Dent that just came out with a brand new podcast?
Yeah, the Good Enough Dads podcast that released last Wednesday with an interview from Hamish Blake.
Oh, dead set. Where can I hear that one on?
You can hear that on the listener app or Spotify.
That's insane, mate. That's so cool, man. So I'm so pumped you got onto her, man. She's an absolute legend. What did you get out of it?
Man, the part that I love the most was we were talking about dad's way and mum's way of parenting and how there's got to be a bit of room for both, and that dad's way, as long as you're not, you know, putting your child in harm or danger, that dad's way is good enough. So that was a really cool point. And I think that's something that dads will really enjoy out of this, is just having that affirm, like the difference between boys and girls, not just between like our sons and daughters, but also the way that mums and dads think differently. So I think there's some really great, concrete, actionable stuff there for our listeners.
Absolutely amazing, dude. Man, it's been so long since I've actually done a episode myself. Yeah. What's our podcast even about?
Oh, dude, you know, I heard this statistic the other day that's pretty epic, and I think it really captures what the podcast is about. Did you know 95% of mums, their first port of call for help and support is their partner, is the dad? And I just think that really captures what we're trying to do here, is we're helping fathers so that they can help their families and you know, doing their family life even better, doing fathering even better, parenting even better. Like that's what we're really on about, is helping dads be that support for their kids and for their partners.
That's a fantastic statistic, mate. The person who gave you that stat must have been an absolute legend. He sounds like a top bloke.
Just a genius, really.
I love him already. I love him already.
Mate, I'm telling you, though, you've really got to go check this interview out because it is phenomenal, man.
I will. I'm going to do that right now.
Do it right now.
This minute. And you know what else I'm going to do?
What else are you going to do, man?
Because I support you, because I support this podcast,
yeah.
I'm going to like, share, and subscribe. I'm going to do that. That's the way that I can get behind you to encourage you. Because it's what I do. I'm a good bloke. You know, I'm a good bloke. I'm going to support you, buddy. And this way, more people are going to be supported. More dads are going to be supported, which means more fathers, families are supported as well. The Fs. The two Fs.
The two Fs.
Fathers and families. That's great. Fun. Love it. Words are awesome.
Yeah.
Mate, I'm going to go check that out right now, dude. So I'll catch you later. You have a great day. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, man. Well, good morning, Maggie Dent, and welcome to the Dad's Group podcast. It's so great to have you here.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for inviting me. You know, this is one of my big passions, supporting boys and men anywhere in the world.
We always like to start each episode by checking in with our guests. So I'd like to ask you, how are you going out of 10 today?
Actually, really good. I'm home. I've been traveling a lot, so I punched out a really good 8 hours sleep. And last night was my good bloke's 68th birthday. So we had the grandies over and my son, and had a really fun night and many games of Uno. So I'm in a good space.
That's awesome. Love that family time. It's so critical when you've been away. I know I've been away for work recently, and just that quality time. We went camping and the connection was like better than before I'd gone away on the trip. So, yeah, definitely relate to that.
Totally. Even though there's all that packing, unpacking and chaos. But at the end of the day, when you've spent time without the same usual distractions, I think it's one of those big messages I keep saying to dads, you know, you don't have to have great big, huge quality time. If you do, great. But if you don't, pack some into these moments, or it's the micro moments. You ruffle your kid's head when you walk past him and you give your son a little punch on the arm. You do a secret hand signal. You're the one who does the bedtime ritual. You're the one every now. It's these little micro moments that collectively build connection as well, if you've got the quality time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That balance of quality time over quantity time.
That's it. They can do both. That's even better.
I wonder if you could share with us, you know, you're not a father, but you know a lot about fatherhood, and you were telling me before, off air, if I can say that, you were telling me that you've spent a lot of your career speaking to dads. So I wonder what's informed your ideas around the fathering space?
Yeah, can I preface it by saying that the reason I'm deeply passionate about this is that my mum was a difficult woman, so I spent my childhood hanging out with my dad on a farm. So, of course, you know, the first 5-6 years of my life, you know, I was just his little sidekick. And then as I grew older, I was hours and hours in the truck and the tractor. So hours and hours marinated with a good man means that I've kind of got a capacity to communicate via both gender lenses, although I can still glaze over when there's too much talking going on with a bunch of women. So, and then I had, you know, obviously I became a high school teacher and then a counsellor. And when I was counselling troubled children in Albany in WA, so right down the bottom, men started to come in and I had no idea why they were coming. And I started to listen to their, you know, their confusion around relationships and being a dad. And then I began some work in suicide prevention because we had a massive drought in WA. And so I was out on the road with a few of the community groups. And so I started to end up in sheds with just men. And we do the whole mental fitness and it's okay and all that kind of stuff. But it was afterwards that dads would come up to me and say, "Hey, Maggie, can you give me an idea on how I can connect with my 14-year-old daughter? I got no idea." Or, "Why do I feel so bad when my toddler has a meltdown? It's like I failed my toddler. Can you give me some clues?" So I started getting these questions. And then in the end, I thought, oh, look, I'll just throw one open and see if dads only want to come along. And I've done them, you know, all around, you know, particularly rural Australia. I obviously sold out in lots in WA because I'm a West Aussie. But then we just were selling out 400 seats of dads only. And sometimes even my normal parenting seminars, you know, I shared to you before, when I first started like 15 to 20 years ago, I'd lucky if I got one or two dads and he was dragged along. And now, you know, up to 40% of dads come and they're not being dragged along. So I think the cultural shift we have, thank goodness for it, means that our dads are, you know, it's been normalized now. It's been, this is okay for dads to step up with big hearts and to have babies on their chests and to be the stay-at-home dad and to really participate in the parenting journey rather than the previous one, which was it's only a woman's job. But that meant there was a lot of gaps because if your dad had been, you know, that dad that worked really hard and when he came home, he sat down and he just did dad stuff and he didn't know how to be that dad. That's what dads kept saying to me, "Maggie, I just want to be the dad I want to be, the dad I yearned for when I was 4. I want to be that dad. I just, every now and then my dad comes out my mouth. And I get frustrated really quickly because I can't fix stuff." And so, you know, I'm loving the fact that Steve Bidoff and I are equally as passionate in this space. And I know you've already had him on. He was kind of my mentor. And that's the only parenting book I read. The other little bit that's helped me understand boys is I only had 4 of them. I didn't get any girls. So and I started witnessing, even in my classrooms as a high school teacher, that boys were treated differently to girls. And then when my own transitioned into school, you know, I could see and I kept thinking, gosh, look at it. We still think boys are tough so we can be harsh to them and we keep on getting frustrated because they're much more impulsive. So I wanted to change that lens and not only for dads, dads get little boys, right? They do. They remember being that boy who's jumping up and down on the couch while he's trying to watch TV, right, because he's just got so much energy. I had to help change the lens for mums. And so my Mothering Our Boys book, which turns 5 in a couple of weeks, oh my God, the shift around mums seeing their boys differently. And also, apparently, I've improved a lot of marriages.
Yeah, well.
Because when I explain how we do communicate a little differently, that men aren't deliberately trying to forget bin night. There's just a lot on their mind and they're single focused, right? They still would love to remember it all, but females have a much better capacity for that, right? And
yeah.
So don't be awful to your male partner because he's forgotten bin night. Just rub his arm and remind him what day it is. He'll be up like a shot, right? So apparently this whole rubbing your husband's to remind him of things has become a part of a lot of relationships instead of getting crabby. Right? Because we have got big differences. I know we're going to touch on some of that here, even though we know gender is more fluid. You know, I'm more bloke than I am female, even though I'm in a female body. And I'm, you know, not in the least bit identify with, you know, that whole difference. But we know statistically significant numbers of our boys and our girls are atypical. And I think I want both of us to understand the nuances of that, and also that any child that you are raising can be a blend of all sorts of things, including interesting temperaments. And you will know if you've got a feisty rooster in your house. They'll push every button you've got. And if you know that that's what who they've come as, then we look at how do we parent this child a little differently to that little lamb that never needs to be growled at, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's being able to tease those things out in a common sense way, because really that's me. I just want to shoot it down the middle saying, no, it's not a perfect art form. And there is no perfect parent or perfect mum or dad.
Yeah, and I think part of what I'm hearing you say is connecting in with that shift within society of recognising the individual. You know, like it used to be that, you know, everyone just played their role and the kid's role was to be quiet and do everything parents said. Dad's role was to go do the job and mum's role was to run the household. It's not like that anymore.
No. And those messages of kids should be seen but not heard, they don't have a voice, they should be obedient, you know, all. And also then we, you know, basically the Skinnerism or behaviourism says that the only way you get your children to be decent humans is you punish the hell out of them when they do what they shouldn't do and you reward them when they do what you want. Now we've got kids who need a sticker for breathing well, like it's ridiculous. So we're correcting quite a few of those things because it wasn't just your parents that were doing those things. It was your, you know, 10 or 12 years of schooling, and we're still trying to change that because, you know, our kids see through. I'm going to say boys see through stickers far quicker than a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They know it sucks.
And I think correcting is a good word for it because it is sort of a whole societal course correction, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that is what is challenging because we are subconsciously responding to our primary, you know, caregiving. It's deeply within us because it's built a predictability in our brain, which is subconscious and automatic. And to be able to change that, you know, that is tricky. So one of the things I've discovered in my workshops with men, because you know that the male is a lot more pragmatic. Come on, a lot more pragmatic, right? Get a job done, then move on to the next. A lot of us women have got 10 things going, right? And we frustrate the hell out of them. But so I went to the same wheat belt town, right, to run the same dads only seminar. And I've noticed the same 5 dads in the front row. And I've looked at him and said, mate, you were here last year. What are you doing? And they went, no, I was good. Yeah, we've got three key points I went home and did. Now I come for 3 more. And I said, I talked for an hour and a half. Yeah, but I can only take 3. Right? So I think that's kind of, there's this, and also they want something they can do. Right? And so I remember working in Karratha and I had a lot of FIFO dads there because they're away a lot, right? And they miss their families regardless of how tough they appear. And we were talking about how do we stay connected when we're away, you know, and it was just really, really big. Anyway, there were some dads there who I gave that suggestion again. You know, write a little note in your kid's lunchbox, you know, I love you, mate, little love heart. Just stick it in it and see what happens, you know, or write a you know, sometimes our dads who've never heard the words of love come out of their dad's mouth find that a little difficult. Anyway, I got all these messages later on the next afternoon from all the mums around Karratha going, oh, my God, my heart melted this morning. Oh, there's all these little love notes and the kids are racing around giving daddy hugs and I'm looking at pure magic from yeah. such a tiny gesture, but they get up and they go do it.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, those are the things that I know as a father I've responded best to is what's the little, you know, sort of constructive, actionable yep. items that I can just get in,
yeah,
you know. And we were talking again before we started recording about how for a lot, well, for any parent really who has time anymore, but for a lot of dads, who's going to pick up a parenting book?
No.
You know, and when there's so much theory and information and history to sort of dissect before you can get to those actionable things. Oh, so,
seriously. Yeah. And also, I'm you know, put my hand up, I write notoriously big ones, but I also write ones with really good indexes. So you just go to that index and look at that. One other thing in that space I want to throw out to any dads listening, if you have a female partner and she tags you into a post, read it.
Yeah.
Right? Just that will be something that she's believing the two of you might need a bit of clarity around. It's not a criticism of you. It's how do we do this team parenting a little bit better? And I reckon this has captured an idea. And often that's what's happened with when I do the whole rooster orchid daughter. So they're the volatile little girls who are go-getters, but they have the most enormous feelings. And are quite sensitive to things like embarrassment and not winning and not appearing good enough and all these things that dads can find really confusing. So I notice those are the ones that often get tags with dad. Let's have a chat about this later. Man, that is gold because you don't have to read a whole parenting book. You're just going to deal with the whoever is causing the most conflict in the home. And we can have a chat about it over coffee later or a glass of wine or a beer or something. It's how do we get on the same page? And I know that that's really frustrating for some because can I bat really big again for dads here? Because I've had that women have an idea of, look, we just don't stop second guessing ourselves, right? We review every decision we make, which is why I talk about how there's a difference with how men and women go to sleep at night. Because men go to the single focus box and I'm going to bed, so I go to sleep, right? So a female goes into her preparing to go to bed box and, of course, she's laying there and she's revisiting every decision she made during the day. She's just thought, no, I forgot to wash those things. I'm going to need them tomorrow. There is a load of washing in there. Oh, my God, my eyebrows will need doing. I'll have to book that in. I wonder what, oh, God, is it book week coming up next week or the week after? And then they also do running to the future and they're going to wonder whether the child's going to get to university. And then they'll accidentally revisit their wedding day and regret something about that. So, in other words, their brain just does this massive thing. And so it's 1 o'clock and they're still freaking going over everything, right? So sometimes they want to do things their way because I feel they've seen somewhere, you know, that's how you do it, right? Easily influenced by compare despair. And, of course, everyone only puts their good things up on Insta. They're not putting up the other stuff when it goes bad. So we all get conditioned a bit. Anyway, my biggest challenge is that I want us early to have the conversations that there can be a dad way and a mum way to dress our kids or to do stuff. And it needs to be okay. It doesn't have to be the same. And I remember having a conversation with one of my boys when he had a little one and he would been growled at because he had put the onesie over the leggings instead of under the leggings. And he just asked if there was really a problem with that. And I said, no. But you need to have that conversation. The child is never going to be harmed with whichever way the onesie goes, right? And that just be a dad way. And sometimes dads do nappies differently. Dads feed them differently. We need to be okay with that. So there's a part of me that needs to keep on educating mum, saying if they're stepping up, having a go, back out, right? Because if you start criticizing a dad for having a crack, well, he's going to basically put his hands up, isn't he, and say, what's the point? So there's a dad way and a mum way. As long as the child's not being harmed, let's just rock with it. And can we laugh about it later?
Yeah. I'm instantly reminded of some Bluey episodes, you know, like Daddy Drop Off or Daddy Put Down, where it's, you know, Bandit's, you know, doing his thing and it's completely different and the kids are like, what?
Yeah.
But as you say, they're not being harmed. No. They're safe and all of their needs are being met.
Absolutely.
And I think that's such a great, you know, and for dads, I know for me there was a lot of intimidation about entering into some of those spaces because there was a specific way in A, B, C, and D. But just to focus back in on what are the needs, are they safe, you know, are they happy, healthy, and flourishing? And that's the focus. So if the hair's a bit off or, you know, the shirt's inside out or whatever it might be, you know, mismatching socks or, you know, at the end of the day, if they get to daycare, they have a fun day. Yeah. Or if they, you know, whatever it might be, get to swimming and they, you know.
Yeah.
So I think for dads, like, keep it so simple, as you're saying, like, are they safe? Just keep asking yourself that.
I think also I want to reassure dads too that we know that dads, you know, so traditionally dads, boys, men have a lot of banter and teasing and laughter in their natural relationships. And, you know, sometimes that can be inappropriate. But let's just, I just want to remind dads to be that lightening up character in the house because mums often are wired into intense anxiety about being a mom and all the rest of it. And my dad was that dad. Oh my God, his sense of humor, his jokes, his one-liners. And I've blessed that a couple of my boys have downloaded those. But there are times I want dad to be the lighten up character because we can get stuck. Women can get stuck in ruminating loops and self, you know, criticism that is hard to get out of, particularly when they haven't met their own needs because they often prioritize their children ahead of them. And I talk about it as being their burnt chop syndrome that so often they'll eat the leftover of the dinner or the lousy bit because long as everyone else is okay. And I keep saying, no, that's not okay because you're saying you're not as worthy as everyone else in the family, right? So we need to make, if you like the burnt chop, go for it. But you deserve to be. So can you see? And sometimes the resentment that women say is because they feel that no one's noticing how much they're doing. But sometimes they're doing way more than you need to do, right? And I love it because dads often just say, hey, chill, babe, chill. Come on, couch. Forget about it. It's all good. We'll sort it out later. But a woman wants to do it right now, right? And so we have to have those. When dads lighten up and be a bit ridiculous, it can shift the whole environment of the home. And I think, yeah, we all need to lighten up a bit more because, you know, like seriously, what goes down in our homes with our families, you either cry or you laugh, and I'm still laughing. And I love it now that my boys are all dads that they still take the piss out of me with the things I did wrong. But they also share all their own disasters. None of us keep it under a lid. We all come out. That's what I'm loving when I'm hearing from dads. I'm loving the coffee groups of dads. Sometimes I was somewhere doing a really big night. And there were five young lads, I call them young because they were under 25, and a couple of them were my mates' mates, you know, and they'd come up to me and, you know, two of them had pregnant wives, one had a three-month-old and one had a six-month-old, and they came up and said, hey, Maggie, we started having coffee meetings. We don't go to the pub anymore. We have coffee meetings and strategize. And oh, my God, my heart nearly melted out of my chest. And I thought, that's the cultural change, right? Right? We're going to help each other be a good dad because we haven't done it before and we're all a bit raw at this. And that, yeah, isn't that, and that's what you've discovered as well. You create those opportunities that, you know, we can, you know, we can share those moments, we can laugh about them and then we can go, yeah, this is what I tried. It sometimes worked, but it didn't. So actually, women have been doing that for a long time. But right now, our dads need to do it, and in a dad way, which is a little bit more lighthearted, probably. And to know that being, you know, being a less than perfect dad is being a good enough dad, and that's the research that we know that for all parents, not just dads, that to be good enough, you only have to get it right about 30% of the time. I'd like to aim a bit higher than that, but that's what the research shows. I think, you know, that's doable. And that's kind of one of the reasons why when I was approached to do a podcast for dads, I kept saying, hey, I'm not a dad, right? But it was very much that my common sense resonates with dads, and that when I talk with them, I can give them some guidance and some ideas, but not from a teachable space. And it is you can muck up and stuff up and still equal good enough. And are we learning from those mistakes? Like, I mean, even I left one of my boys at the pool. Like, fortunately, he was a state swimmer, so he didn't drown. But and I thought Dad had him. Dad thought I had him. So it was only 50% my problem. But we never forgot another child again, because we decided a new strategy, right? So every time we do muck up as parents, we go, okay, so how do we make sure that doesn't happen again or happens less noticeably in front of the whole community? And we live 40Ks out of town, so you can imagine how much fun it was.
I wonder... A couple of thoughts of what you just said. The first being, you know, the 30% is enough. And I wonder for some dads who maybe didn't have the best relationship with their own father, to instead of focusing on the 70% that their dad's got wrong, you know, maybe it's more than that, but just trying to find that 5, 10, 15, 30% that their dads did get right, and focusing on that and building on that, and sort of, yeah, focusing on that as a legacy of parenting rather than the...
I think it's way bigger than that, Adam, and that's when I did the research for From Boys to Men. I had, you know, like 1,600 or 1,700 dads who were over... They had to be over 30.
I hope
there's a prefrontal. To give me their advice around how they travelled that adolescent journey. And what was really interesting in the window of who influenced you most... was nearly 60% said their mums. And I felt in that message, there were some that said, you know, I have copied a lot of how my mum mothered into my fathering, right? Because it's parenting, right? Parenting is non-gender, right? And I did watch this one day with one of my own sons. Look, I got quite emotional. My third son is actually like, gosh, a male mirror version of me. Like, he was the whoopsie boy who landed on Halloween. That will give you an idea of how much energy he has. Anyway, he had a very volatile three-year-old son who would scream blue murder when he didn't get his own way, right? And my God, it was triggering for all of us. Anyway, he was here one weekend and he was screaming because he couldn't get what he wanted from his sister. And I watched my son scoop him up. And scoop him up and said, hey, mate, we're going to go outside for a while. He scooped him up and went outside and walked around up and down the deck spotting birds and things. And I realized, oh, my God, that's what I used to do. And I got quite emotional because I thought, my God, he's fathering how I mothered, not how his dad fathered. And then I realized, you know, we're wired to model, and we can model on anyone. And it was also some of the messages from the men who said they'd modeled themselves on teachers, both male and female, in terms of how they wanted to be as an adult. So we are constantly being influenced by what we see, and it's not just the influence of our dad. It is the influence of significant people who behave in ways that we admire and respect. And that can be, you know, people in your community or your grandparents or an uncle. There are a lot of uncles and aunts that have influenced our kids. So I think that's great news as well, because that gives way more potential. And I guarantee that's just landed for a lot of dads right there.
For sure.
Then you know what's going to happen now, Adam? Because men are way deeper than women give them credit for. They're going to process that for days, right? And really go, yeah, no, I remember, yeah, that's, do you know what I mean? So it is one of the things I've discovered not only in my work but in the work of Alison Armstrong, who's studied men for a long time, is they're way deeper. And that when you form a view or an opinion, you've really, really thought it through. Whereas, you know, most females will change our mind quite quickly. And I think that's a challenge sometimes too, because if a man has formed an opinion that men should be the boss at home, because that's the way it should be, that is what the patriarchy has said, then that can be really problematic for them to make subtle changes, because that is a mindset, and mindsets are belief systems that we've had, you know, either conditioned or, you know, hammered into us, that how can I still be a man if I'm not the man of the house, right? And it's one of the biggest dilemmas that I've shared with so many men is because there's stages of boyhood to manhood that I use based on that Alison Armstrong. And so we're a page boy, and then we become a knight, which is, of course, adolescence, you know, that woo-woo. And then the knight at some point changes into a prince, which is when we would step into manhood. So that's the late 20s. And early prince years is about, oh, my God, where am I going to get my space? How am I going to get my stuff sorted so I can have a family, right? It's this big, like, now's the time. I've stopped stuffing around and get my stuff sorted, which is really, really important. And then middle prince is often where our dads are biologically wired to work their backside off so I can provide for my partner and my children, right, so that they don't have to, because that's where a mother should be, right? So that's a wired in biological and social conditioning. But it's also the window when they're often there is babies and little ones. So here's the dad working 1,000 hours a week, right, doing exactly what he feels is right for the people he loves, but he's not there, you know, like after there, and he's not there to help the woman with a who hasn't slept much. And it's this little tug and pull of how do I do both in today's world? And that conversation is one, you know, that comes up so often for me, you know, and I still remember the story of the FIFO dad I met in Karratha. He came up to me after my presentation. He said, Maggie, so how do I stop my girls crying when I ring? Because when I ring, they miss me and they're crying. And I said, well, mate, how long have you been away? Because often those rotations are a month or 6 weeks or 2 weeks. He'd been away 5 months. He said, I didn't realize it was 5 months. But you know what? I've been sitting here and I heard that bit about the middle prince. Look, I've got a $100,000 boat. I've got a house here. I've got a house on the Sunshine Coast. When's it enough? Like, oh, my God. So he said, you know what I've decided? I'm quitting my job. I'm going home to my girls. And there's a part of me deeply hoping that mum hasn't moved on. But can you see that sometimes you just get hooked into this is the one right way, whether it's parenting, it's how to be a man or in your workspace, and we've got to work out that we can have a different way if it's not giving us what we want. But it takes courage. And change isn't something, you know, that particularly boys and men aren't good at. Transitions and change is actually, it destabilizes us and makes us feel a little less secure and strong. So that's one of my big, you know, challenges. If you can't work that one out with conversations with who you're co-parenting with, get some professional help to plan out a way you can do it. And the good news is that the Fathering Project now has got companies coming online that are honouring fathering and giving fathers flexibility they've never had before without the stigma that, you know, there's something wrong with you because you're choosing to spend more time with your family. Oh, my God. How good is that, Adam?
It's huge.
Right? We'll shift that stigma as well. And I think one of the blessings of COVID is that there are plenty of dads now who have flexibility that they, if they've got a sick kid, they don't have to take a day off, either parent. They can work from home. I've heard dads say that has been like a game changer in their house. And they just take it in turns who has the time off, but they can still work from home, right?
Yeah.
I don't lose a day's pay. I don't let my team down. I don't let my boss down. Mm-hmm. I've got my kid at home with me. Man, winner, winner. It's one of the gifts that gave us.
Yeah. And you know, with that too, it's, well, I can contribute to the household now as well. I can do that load of laundry. I can chuck the dishwasher on. I can chop up some veggies for dinner. That balance. And, you know, hearing you talk then, the middle prince stage, which a lot of it, like our audience are mainly new and expecting dads in that, you know, sort of early 30s, you know, late mid-20s, early 30s. And, you know, so many of our listeners, our dads are in that phase, in that identity shift of, holy crap, I'm a dad now. And all of the ideas and opinions and beliefs and biases that come with that because of the, you know, the stories they're bringing into their family. And I think almost every dad I talk to, it's that question of, well, what am I working for?
Yeah.
Because I'm putting in these 10,000, 20,000 hours of work seemingly, and because of this value of family, yep, but I'm not actually giving that time, yeah, back to family. And how do I, you know, navigate this? How do I, what am I working for? What is, yeah, the way?
So there's, and so it, if I'd love to just finish the other two stages, because that's really profound. So, late prince is usually where a man suddenly looks around and goes, the kids are often in high school or heading off, and, you know, they've got a beach house and, you know, they've paid off most of their mortgage, which might not happen today as much, but he's sitting back going, looking all right, actually looking all right, right? And then all of a sudden there's this thing that says, is that all there is? He's like, is that it? How come I've got a sense of emptiness? How come I thought that would be me? Like, I've got it, I've done it, tick. And then begins the journey to king. And the journey to king is, and apparently that Alison Armstrong argues that that third stage is when we, it only lasts about 6 months, so good luck. And then the tunnel to king is where we peel off all the bullshit we're still believing, and we're realizing that as a man we can contribute even more, but it's not necessarily how big my house is, how big my car is, and, you know, how strong are my muscles. It's what of, it's a deeper thing. It's the calling of men to, you know, support community or vulnerable people, or just to do something. It's not about the money and the accolades. It's about me feeling my worth and value is linked to something I can really feel proud of within myself. And that's tricky because, you know, you sometimes that journey begins with a health crisis or that emptiness at work going, I'm done, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, let's just bugger off around Australia and see what I want to do, you know, like depending on what's going on for them. But it's a beautiful journey because, well, it's not, because it's quite confronting. And it's that midlife crisis. So sometimes men in that space want to go back to middle prince. So they set up a new business, right? Because that gave them a lot of energy. Or they get a younger woman in their life, or they get a faster car, because they're trying to claim the energy, because that middle prince has got lots of energy in it, right? But if they share this with other men who are in the same space, then they can start going, oh, so yeah, I guess, yeah, I've just got to look at something else I can do that gives me worthwhile as I. And I remember once we were in, I'm not sure, I think it was Wagga Wagga, in a really big theatre. And when I got to that, I explained the stages of manhood to them, and I said, so I want you to give it some thought, and I want you to turn to one of the men near you and see where you are in that journey and how's it going for you. Anyway, when I spoke to the tech guy later, he said, Maggie, the seminar was rocking, but when you said, why don't you talk about it, I thought, shit, she's lost it now. But you know what? It can take 4 or 5 minutes, right? And then men turn and they do talk, whereas if it's women, they are straight in. But I knew that, and it was a profound moment. Because all those men were in that reflective state of where they were without any need to put a mask up. And it was something that began a really important conversation, even in a public space with men you weren't really familiar with, because all of them recognized, holy heck, that was me.
What I'm loving about the stages is, you know, dads do like their boxes and their straight lines, and, you know, to a, in a sense, there's a progressive sort of aspect to it, but it also is sort of a roundabout, you know, back and forth zigzagging journey. It's not just a,
no,
you know, A to B. It, no, is, you know, there's soul searching and there's self examination and self awareness as part of that.
Yeah. So,
and I think, again, when you become a dad, when that identity shifts, you're sort of forced to consider, well, who am I? Yeah. Who am I, yeah, actually now?
One of the tricky ones for dads is that into adolescence when your kids go there, because it's kind of easy to be the good fun dad or the engaged dad, and then all of a sudden then the changes that happen with puberty and early adolescence aren't all that pleasant. We know they're driven by all sorts of things, and I spend a lot of time explaining that to parents as, you know, this is exactly what they're meant to do. meant to question us and argue with us and want their own space. And, you know, your boys are going to get really forgetful and disorganized, even though they still were already. And the milk's going to be left on the bench and the empty carton is going to be in the fridge. They're going to lose their backpack. You know, your daughter's going to have big moments just coping with the shifts in the limbic brain. But that makes dads even more keen because they've just mastered, hopefully, parenting up to this bit, yeah, which is actually a lot more predictable than this window. Yeah. How do I do that? Because I will get triggered because the behavior is perceived as disrespectful. And a really big issue for men is respect. Love and respect together almost equally is important. And of course, when you get disrespected or you see your son or your daughter disrespecting your partner, that can fire you up to want you to protect it. And it can get so confusing. And I have held teenage girls sobbing in my office because they had the most fabulous dad and then he disappeared. And he's disappeared because he thinks he should. He doesn't want to either be inappropriate or hug her in a way that makes her uncomfortable. So he just disappears. So one of my big messages to, and it doesn't matter if they've got sons or daughters, is to, you know, obviously choose the right time, but to sit down with your son or daughter and say, look, this is a different time of life, right? And I want to be a good dad here. So can you give me three things that I can do better? Yep. And the three things you want me to stop doing because they really annoy me. So I want to know my, you know, and for a boy, you need to leave him for a week because he's got to figure that out, or a girl will give it to you straight away. And then what you do is you consciously focus on doing it because they want you in their life. They want when they crash your car or they've got scared at a party, we want them to call dad. Or mum, we want them not to be terrified of what dad's going to say. And that really is what would have happened to them. But if you've given those three things, as soon as you step into that pragmatic, I can do this, you need to make sure you keep it somewhere in case you forget, you will watch that relationship change instantly. And I think that's that beauty, to have the courage to step up and say, I want to be a better dad because, this is not who I want to be. This is a difficult time. We're going to have moments we don't like each other. But how do we fix the ruptures? How do I still want to hang out with you. So what is it? Can I have a dad date once a week? Can I just take you to Macca's, you know, on a Friday afternoon? Or after we go to netball, do we go and have, you know, cappuccino and cake? Make a regular connection. Don't ever break it. And just keep turning up with as much heart and soul, and they will turn to you, not away from you.
If it's okay, I'd like to zoom in on some various aspects of your work, and we've addressed it in bits and pieces so far of those differences in between the genders. And as I said, we've had Steve on. He's talked a little bit about the differences in parenting boys and girls. But I wonder if you could speak to those specific needs that a boy has and a girl has, whether you could even just give us the 3 to 5 points of, you know, this is a boy's needs, this is a girl's needs.
Okay, all right. Well, fundamentally, let's start with the very first part, that that whole notion that boys are tough is just the biggest pile of poop you can imagine. What we actually know, and I'm sure Steve may have touched on it as well, is that a boy baby is already cognitively behind a girl baby. They also have more difficulty attaching and bonding. And a part of that's because of the estrogen. There's a lot more estrogen in girls, which is a bonding neurochemical, whereas boys have testosterone, which is a kind of out there, energetic, war kind of one. So, hello. And that's why I think sometimes boys can frighten mums, because as soon as they can move, they're off. So the physicality and the impulsivity is partly driven because they are a boy, but also the testosterone is a high energy thing. And I think one of my challenging moments was, you know, because that was my normal, you know, that's all I knew. And then I had a granddaughter and she was 18 months of age. And I watched her with her, like, in deep thought. And then I saw her wander over to her dad, her mum's in the kitchen, and ask daddy for a biscuit. And I thought, holy poop, she has just been pondering and reflecting on how to get her need met. That doesn't happen with a boy, right? So this is one of the biggest things that frustrates everyone who has boys of any age, is they just don't think, right? So part of the argument is that between the left and the right brain, boys are in the right brain, which is a doing brain. And they got a lot of energy. So doing is just happening and doing, right? And the left brain is where logic is and language and reasoning, yeah? And when you link them closely, girls can go to both easily, boys can't. And so often boys are getting yelled at and shouted at because of their impulsivity, because they can't sit still. And I keep growling at people for taking boys to coffee shops in the first place. Just it's not going to be a place they're going to shine, right? Just get takeaway. They also, the listening stuff, it's really important that we've talked about single focus a bit, but they are in the moment right now. And so often what happens is, you know, if they're really absorbed in building their Lego or, you know, sitting on the couch having a, you know, watching Bluey and playing with their penis, they can't hear you call out from the kitchen. They're not ignoring you. They are not in that moment. And one of my biggest tips for mums was to go in, you know, and rub their shoulder or look them in the face and say, 3 minutes and it's dinner in there. Right? Yeah. So a big one is, you know, that they're not deliberately not listening to you, that until they're connected to you, they don't hear you. And sometimes too many words fries their head, right? And I keep saying to mums, you know, give them a bit of a cue sometimes. You know, you've got David, bag, hat on head, door. And it might seem a bit blunt, but they can handle a certain amount of words. But after that, they're too many words. So when we improve our communication, it can make such a difference. Now, the other thing that girls are unbelievably good at is memory. So they remember stuff that, I mean, as I argue jokingly at my seminars, women can remember stuff that didn't actually happen. But so boys are quite often they come in and they'll want to know where's the socks, right? And you've had the same sock drawer for the whole time, right? Frustrates the hell out of them. So sometimes we've got to work to the girls' advantages with those things. And it's great when there is a girl and a boy in a family, because the girl will often take over the other mothering of the son. Like, he will also get to do a lot more colouring in, which is, you know, Steve Bedford will tell you that girls start with fine motor control and end up with core strength, and it's the reverse for boys, Rich, as well. They can't pee straight. It's a little thing, right? So when we recognise that they're not developmentally in the same space and we can't have the same expectations for them, that if you can possibly delay starting your little boy until he's closer to six, one of the worst things we've ever done, Adam, and I mean, I've been banging on for years about this, is that we push down the formalised learning stage regardless of the research. And our boys turn up in an environment they can't do well. So they feel bad about themselves, and when we feel bad about themselves, we promote stress. Stress has to come out usually physically. So often boys will act out their fear and their embarrassment and their anger and their stress through behaviour. Then they get busted by, and it's the whole big complex thing. So I think those are the things we need to understand. When a boy does some things, we've got to really question, was he really trying to hurt his brother by jumping off the bunk? I thought he thought it was funny. You know, and there are times that he actually didn't mean to hurt anyone, right? He didn't mean to break the window. And we go in there going, ah. So intention's a really big one. However, one of my other steps in amongst that is that when they have done wrong that has caused harm of any kind, and I keep saying the three rules you need to have for all kids, but particularly boys: try not to hurt yourself, try not to hurt anyone else, and try not to damage the world around you. And if you do, then your job is to make it right. I think that accountability step, the sooner we start that for boys, the sooner it's in place before the teenage years and as an adult man, that they need to know they'll sometimes muck up. It doesn't make them a bad human. It made them, they made a poor choice. And the shaming and the hitting around boys, we've got to stop it. And we need to stop traffic light systems in classrooms and writing boys' names in red, right? So when I go to the girls, I am going to say it. I was trying to find all the research why they were so different because I, gosh, my, I'd never seen tantrums quite like my granddaughters, like an hour. And then if you actually might have suggested they were frustrated, you could get another hour because they disagreed with you. There is more emotional intensity in the females and you just have to accept it, right? It's not something you're supposed to shut down. It's not something that's wrong, and that gradually they're learning how to express themselves. And oh golly, it's like quite a lot different. And the biggest other two differences I'd like to explore is one is around friendships. One of my most popular blogs was called Fragile Boy Friendships, because I'd noticed that boys to make friendships, it's about proximity and how much time they spend with another boy. It's not, oh, I really like your hair. Will you come and play with me? I really like you as my friend. Will you be my, no, it's none of that. It's just, do you hang out with me and do we kind of, yeah, all right. And when I was doing a bit of a chat on TV around that, I asked at each of the big TV stations, the main guys, I said, so how many friends have you got? And they'd say, oh, yeah, two. And I'd say, so when did you last see them? I went, oh, about 10, 15 years ago. So they've made acquaintances, but they only class the ones from early. And then developing friendships often means aggression, nurturance. So there's a lot of wrestling and slapping and jumping, and which some people perceive as bad behavior, but boys don't use words. They actually do that only to the boys they like. So it's quite complex in that space. And girls use all the words, oh, the drama around girl friendships. Holy heck, that's just another ball game because they're different. And then the big one is around play. I love it. I love watching boys play. They just go, you know, if you're in an early childhood setting, it's just kind of like a little swarm that go all over the place, right? No planning. So one of the things, there's a study that was done with 4-year-old girls and boys. There were three of them in each group, and it classically shows a profound difference. And that the first one, there was a castle, and they sent the three boys into the castle. They poked it a bit and thought, nah, no fun, took off and played another game. They sent the girls in and they all sat down around the castle and then started talking. And after 6 minutes, they kept talking. And after 8 minutes, they kept talking. And after about 12 minutes, they were still talking. And around 18 minutes, they'd planned out the rules for the game. Boys don't want rules. They just want to play. And then the second thing was a stuffed toy. So they threw a stuffed toy out into that floor area. The boys ran in, threw it around a few times and just went off and had something else. They didn't even play with it. The girls walked in and the girl who picked up the stuffed toy, like within 10 to 15 seconds, the other two girls have joined together, moved away, sat down with their back to the girl with the toy and excluded her. Now, I'm sorry, but, you know, at the end of the day, why we need to have, and this is my recipe for raising healthy kids, your children need to play as frequently as possible with multi-age children of all genders in an environment with potential risk, with as little, like with a grown up within a, you know, curdling scream distance, because children are biologically wired. The oldest will automatically start looking over young ones and get responsible. They don't need to be told. They just do it. And also young children model themselves and learn off what other children are doing. So they often learn their social and emotion skills by watching older children, not by the lecture from their mum or their dad. And, you know, that would help everything because, as I said to you before, the boy there has a sister who does a lot of colouring in will tend to actually practice it more, which means not like mine. Oh, my God, couldn't colour in within the lines. And it's like that experience that early childhood educators often do. Can you stick the legs on the caterpillar, which is the egg carton? Because it's a fine motor thing, right? And often a little boy who might be sitting next to a girl, he might put three legs on, right? and then race outside to play.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the girl next to him has done all 12 equidistant with colourful dots and sparkles, right? Why has the boy gone outside? He's gone, oh, I did 3. Why would I need to do the other 9? I nailed it, right? Or he's looked at her and thought, nah, can't win that. I'm out of here. Right? So different, right? But the big thing I think I want dads to realize is that boys and, you know, possibly men give themselves self-worth, right? They, so that whether they're trying to hit a target or they're building their Lego in a way or they want to get up that tree faster or they want to win the race, right? As soon as I've done that, I go, gee, I did good. I feel good about me. So when we set boys up to fail in environments, what happens is they can't give themselves self-worth, and what they often do is attack themselves and shame themselves, which creates anger. So that is my biggest challenge, is girls' self-worth comes from a different space, Adam. It's what do other girls think of me? I get my self-worth by do they like me? Do they like my jumper? Which is so frustrating, right? But it's noticeably so different. So when we have a boy that is, you know, starting to be reluctant to go to school, I guarantee, A, he doesn't feel safe with the teacher he has because they haven't connected with them, because boys need that safety because they're less confident at working with people who don't make them feel safe. So that's the first thing, he doesn't feel safe. 2, he doesn't have any opportunities to display that he can do stuff good. So in the olden days, the boy who couldn't colour in within the lines and didn't know his letters might have conquered the monkey bar in the playground. So his cred came from that. So he would go because he knew he was good at that. If he's got boring as bat poo play equipment, he can't conquer anything. So therefore, why would I go in an environment where I can't win? And the third one is I'm being denied my need to move. I get busted when I move and squirm and squiggle. And we have to change the lens that when boys are fidgeting and squirming, which also would have been me, they're actually trying to create dopamine so they continue to pay attention. It's not them deliberately wanting to be naughty. So we've got a long way to go to be able to change the lens around how we see boys' behavior, because girls with that, you know, going to left to right brain is how can I get people to like me? I'll get the teacher to like me. I'll behave really well and I'll be a good girl. All that sort of, I'm sorry, bullshit that I'm still untangling. Even though I was part boy, I knew that I needed to do people pleasing and be good because otherwise it's not worth it. Does that make sense again? And we don't want our girls to keep doing that their whole entire lives and to be quiet when they've got something they want to say. But we need to stop shaming, you know, our boys for being, you know, as possibly developmentally exactly who they're meant to be.
For sure. Maggie, what I've loved about what you've shared throughout this whole episode, but especially during that portion that just talking about gender, is that you've given our dads some really great data and information to sort of integrate and do that self-review of where am I at in my stage of life, and really do that self-investigation, but then project that into like those differences of if I've got a son or a daughter or both or whatever it might be, to really think about, okay, how am I going to approach this child? And you know, it's funny listening to you talk about, I've got a nearly 2-year-old boy, as I told you at the start, and the other night he had his toy truck and he was just driving up and down the wall and we were saying, you know, yelling his name basically at him. He was only a couple of meters away and he was just engrossed in driving this
totally
thing up
absorbed.
And down the wall, totally absorbed. And then I have a day a week at home with him while my wife works, and he kept asking, where's mum? I'm like, dude, you literally saw her drive off for work. Like, she's at work. And he couldn't remember that she'd left, and he couldn't grasp that she'd be home later. It was that immediate need he talked about.
Oh, and there's another really key thing, because girls are much more capable of being able to feel attached to 2 people.
Yeah.
Whereas boys, it's a lot harder because they're not as good at it. So it's also happening with one of my sons. He's doing emergency medicine. And so he had odd hours. So, of course, there were days he just hardly saw his son for 4 or 5 days. And then he was full on. Well, he didn't want a bar of him. Yeah. You've just abandoned me for 4 days. Don't give me that, right? And also, so that's a really important one to remember, that that doesn't mean to say doesn't love you, but kind of like, where's my safe person who I'm used to that's familiar? But also they cognitively being the egocentric window of the toddler. Oh, my God, how triggering is that, right? And my son was saying the other day, not you, Daddy, what mummy, like far out, right? Equally capable. And it's the same thing again, that he's just calling his own shots because he's meant to be developing this voice that says no, right? Frustrating as hell, because without that, they don't develop their own sense of self and their whole sense of identity. But how damn frustrating.
So, and it takes so much work not to take it personally, not to be offended. Like, it's not that he doesn't, as you say, like, as a dad, you have the full capability and
totally.
And you can look after that kid, but that kid wants mums.
Just every now and then. And what's interesting, though, is because my son's wife flew to WA for a grandmother's 90th, so she was away 4 days, and he had a full-on. And he thought, great, so when she comes back, he'll probably just want me. Yeah, but no. And it was never, because he was kind of hoping, and he'd go, no, Daddy. And then the other thing in that window too, I think, is that frustrates dads is not fully understanding how difficult transitions are for children. So we just go, right, time to go. We're leading off. We're going outside. We're going to go to the playground. No, we're going to go home. Snap. No, that's not what they're capable of. So being able to prepare kids for transitions is another really big tip I offer to dads, because, you know, even if it's just a 5 more minutes, or I'll put my timer on, or it's kids really, if they're really absorbed in anything, why would they want to leave? And every now and then I want you to say, do I really need to leave now? What deadline have I got that's making this? Could I give my child another 15 or 20 minutes doing something they love because I've got a schedule? And I remind them of the dawdle of a toddler as being not only sacred, but exactly beautiful and perfect for a toddler. So that walk from the car to the front door, which can take 20 minutes, it's that same thing again. Am I running my adult schedule through my toddler who is not capable of, no concept of time, who is completely in the moment? Can I just sit myself on the front step and watch and wait? You know, does it really matter? That's the challenge, you know, because we just have our own adult stuff and they have no concept of time.
It's so true. And, you know, to go back to where we started in terms of, like, if we want more balance between family life and work life and all of those various commitments, then, you know, it takes a dad to sit there and watch his son, daughter, child, dawdle, get into work 45 minutes late and say, no, actually, I was with my kids and that's okay.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to pick up that time, but right then, that was a moment. That was a moment that if I interrupted it, then, yeah, I didn't need to do that. So that's, it's really big, isn't it? Because we have our own needs. We think our schedule, you know, especially if we've got multiple children. And that is one of the big messages I get from my Canadian friend, Dr. Vanessa Lapointe. She says, you know, the bottom line is to be in that moment, in that space. And I guess as a kid on a farm, we had a lot of being with a lot of scheduling. And I think one of the challenges today is there are so many opportunities that children can be doing that we think are going to be better for them than just kicking a soccer ball around home or, you know, just, you know what I mean? We think, oh, gosh, all the other kids are doing it too. Every now and then I want you to say, right now in our family, is this going to work for us, or is this going to push us to be grumpy parents racing in at 5:30 trying to get a decent feed into them? And, you know, or should we just skip some of it? You know, the childhood's a long journey. And being a bit of an outlier sometimes, as long as both of you are on the same team, it's pretty easy. But you don't actually have to do everything that's out there for your child to become the best person ever. Sometimes becoming that is, do I want one that is, you know, capable of calmness, who has moments when we're not hurrying, who values simplicity, you know? I spent yesterday with two of my grandies here, and my little 3.5-year-old, I don't know how many hours we spent building Duplo. But it was in those quiet moments in between that he was having little chats to me and stuff that were just pure gold. Yeah. And thankfully, as a grandparent, I can do those things when I'm not traveling. So make sure, hopefully, you've got some good, you know, other people in your life. We know we talk about a tribe. So if you haven't got grandparents who are either, you know, loving, caring, close enough, don't forget you can do a lot of digital story reading nowadays via Skype and FaceTime and everything else, thank goodness. But look at your tribe, you know, because other people with children the same age, maybe in the same boat, and sometimes just saying, look, let's meet at the park, I'll pick up the coffees, and we just spend an hour or two at the park. You know, we might just be sitting on the lawn watching them. That is exactly what you all need to be doing with no agenda. Yeah. You know, and yeah. I think the more that we can, you know, create those opportunities in our busy world, the healthier our kids will be and the healthier our grown-ups will be.
Yeah. And, you know, that picture you painted of, you know, just grabbing coffee and watching the kids play, that's dad's group right there.
Yeah, so, I love that. It.
You're promoting us without me prompting. It's great. You know, on that note of, you know, just being and not rushing, I could sit here and be and just listen to you, but our schedules dictate otherwise.
Yeah, they.
But Maggie, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been incredible. Again, I think there's just so much practical, actionable points there for our dads to, you know, listen to this 5 times over, take their 3 points and integrate it for a year, and then we'll come back
get the other
next
three.
Year and do it all over again.
Make sure you write them down somewhere, put them on your phone, because you will forget them. And I just love it, aren't we? It's the best time for humanity in terms of fathering. And you know, there are days I go with my grandchildren to the park and I hardly see any women, and it makes my heart sing, you know. It does. It just really does. And so once again, that message is you just have to be good enough, don't aim for perfect, and celebrate the wins and focus on the wins rather than the moments where we muck up. And then, you know, before you know it, you will be holding the son or daughter of one of your children and you'll go, where the hell did those years go?
Oh, I'm not ready for that. Maggie, for our dads and for our families listening to this who want to follow up and learn more about your work, where's the best place for them to find you?
Oh, golly, isn't it crazy? Apparently I'm everywhere like a rash, according to my sons. just Google MaggieDent.com. But also my YouTube channel has nearly 200 short videos, which are great for dads who don't like reading things. And, of course, the ABC podcast, Parental as Anything. We've done 6 seasons and, you know, that covers everything from, you know, toddlers to teens in every possible way that you could do it. So they're all those wonderful things. Obviously, I have a newsletter that goes out and I write a blog every month, except at Christmas time. And quite often that's really inspired with what parents tell me on the street, what I hear coming through my membership group, what I hear from my own sons and daughters. So it's lucky being a nanny because it keeps my finger on the pulse. And also, if you know, there are dads now who stop me. I used to only be stopped by mums, but now I get stopped by dads who say, oh, my God, thank God for you. Can I take a photo? My wife's going to lose it that I've seen you and she hasn't. So I'm loving that. I'm loving getting hugs from random dads and getting selfies taken, because that means, you know, that my life mission is to make a positive difference in the lives of others. And if I'm doing it, yeah, let me do it till I haven't got a breath in my body. So thanks again for having me, Anne.
And we also want to thank our listener for tuning in today. If you haven't already, go check out our website at www.dadsgroup.org. In this space, we've got some awesome resources for support for families, new and expecting families, There's a lot of mental health support there by some amazing organizations. On this website as well, you can also support Dad's Group through purchasing our merchandise, or a solid donation would be amazing and help us impact the lives and of new and expecting families all around Australia. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week. Cheers, guys.